It came right down to the wire. We expected to see some sort of a mega deal, but raise your hand if you thought it was going to go to the running back yesterday, not the quarterback. Derrick Henry gets signed, and all of a sudden we have a new deal for him and nothing for Dak. Golic and Wingo, ESPN, ESPN2, SiriusXM Channel 80, Jason Fitz in for Trey with Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr. And guys, you'd have read all about it yesterday if you could have.
So I'm wondering if... if, Mike, how you got your information yesterday, because we have a generational gap here between you and I, obviously, and the Twitter world went bonkers yesterday. We're still not back on Twitter, you and I. So I'm wondering how you survived yesterday.
I curled up into the fetal position and sucked my thumb for a while. I went for a long walk and contemplated what my life had become where I had been so dependent on this stupid site.
I was just going to say, how many people that live with the phone in their hand were losing their mind, because it was a lot of yesterday, was it not?
Yeah, there was a massive data, there's a massive security breach at Twitter yesterday. A lot of the verified accounts got, their ability to tweet taken away for a while. And supposedly it's all back, but you and I have been locked out since last night with no sign of return. Twitter support has not been very much helping this situation. So this might just be the end, which, you know what? This is awesome. Maybe I'll get a lot more done now that I'm off this website.
I know I would be fine with that, but I don't know if you would be fine
with that. I'd be more fine than you give me credit for. I already going vast amounts of time without answering my phone. You and the family group chat know that all too
that
well. I check out pretty regularly.
You
so.
How about you,
now,
Jay?
Now, I'll give you the other side of the perspective because, I kept reading yesterday that blue check marks were all shut down off of Twitter.
Where were you reading this on Twitter?
On Twitter. And all of my buddies are like, oh, I'm finally back. And I'm looking around. I'm like, that's when you realize that you have the check mark, but you just don't have it. Like, whatever the threshold is, Twitter was like, oh, we got to take care of this. We got to make sure. Nah, we're good. Like, there was a line, the nah, we're good line. I am below the nah, we're good line.
See, so you were basically walking around at one of those masquerade parties, but in a very much Twitter meme sense. You had the clown mask on in it instead of one of those fancy ones.
I did not get the appropriate invitation to the party. I realized how small my Twitter platform is yesterday. But it would have been, now that I think back on it, would have been a perfect time to say something really, inflammatory. I could have, nobody else could have that space. I could have overused the moment and taken over, a controversial Twitter.
But you didn't.
No. And it would have gotten three likes at that point anyway.
Hey, three for me means going viral. I get double digits and I'm happy. All right, Golic and Wingo presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the show, Penzo Performance Line. We got a bunch of them today. They're going to help us get their insights into everything that happened yesterday. We expected some contract news. All eyes coming up to the deadline at 4 p.m. Eastern were on what was going to happen between Dak and the Cowboys. The answer there is nothing, but there was a significant deal coming right up to the deadline, and it was for Derrick Henry, who signs a four-year extension with the Titans that includes $25.5 million guaranteed. We haven't gotten all of the details of the contract yet, but we know that Derrick Henry is going to be there for the long term. And guys, this one to me made a lot of sense because the Titans are in love with Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry has made it clear he wants to stay there. Plus, as we talked about a lot yesterday, the free agent running back class next year looks stacked. We don't know what the money situation for the NFL is going to be like next year, given whatever their profits turn out to be this year. So for Derrick Henry, he gets locked into 4 years. The Titans get to keep their guy. I mean, this made sense on both sides to me.
Derrick Henry was the leading rusher in the NFL last year. It wasn't going to get any better, right? I mean, it wasn't like he was going to say, okay, I'm going to play on the franchise tag and show them I deserve more money. He was the highest paid or the highest yards rushing in the league last year. And I don't think, at least you may think different, Mike, I don't think it's going to change from a reception standpoint. He had 18 catches last year. He is not a running back that catches the ball out of the backfield, and this offense doesn't dictate that happens. So he's never going to be in the rage of Saquon, of Zeke, of Christian McCaffrey, of these other guys that catch the ball a ton, Alvin Kamara. These guys, Kamara and Saquon, they're going to go by this number because right now Derrick Henry is the fifth highest paid running back in the league. He's topped out. I'm the leading rusher in the league. That's what I do, and this is the deal that came from it. Next year, we're unsure of where the cap may be because of COVID. As Jason has mentioned, and we talked about yesterday, some of the running backs that will be available next year, he would get, in my opinion, from the top paid, get lost in that shuffle. So this is a really good deal for him, $25 million guaranteed for a $50 million deal. I think it was smart of him to do this.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, this should be the paradigm for running back deals going forward. It probably won't be, and teams will probably still overpay for guys that are pass catchers. Alvin Kamara is going to be an interesting case because I think life without Mark Ingram looked a little bit different than a guy who would be deserving of a Saquon Barkley-like contract. So I don't know if I'm ready to go there just yet, but at the very least, he fits the skill set. Derrick Henry doesn't, and looking at the future, the uncertain future created by the virus, the uncertain market created by the glut of backs in the draft that we all talked about yesterday with that, this made an overwhelming amount of sense, and it's rare, I think, to see that sort of awareness, that positional awareness, that self-awareness to say, all right, while I'm confident in my ability, why would I put myself in a disadvantaged situation going forward? Why wouldn't I if I'm in a position? And this is where the relationships of football came into play. The relationship that Derrick Henry and the Tennessee Titans had of mutual respect, mutual desire to make this work in a way that makes people feel wanted in the way that Tennessee did by extending a little bit of goodwill his way with the length of the deal, with a little bit more guaranteed money than he would have had if he was tagged twice on this or played on the tag this year. That bit of goodwill on both sides allowed this to be a deal that people can look at and say, yeah, that made sense. What we'll talk about in Dallas is an example of the exact opposite of that.
Well, and what you mentioned makes sense, and I was hanging out with our friends on 102.5 The Game in Nashville yesterday, and they asked me about the Titans' mindset, and it's a fair question because the Titans as a team let Jack Conklin go. They let Jarrell Casey go. They let Logan Ryan go. All players that have gone to other teams and are expected to make a difference where they end up, right? Like, they're all still talented players, right? But then on the other hand, they invested a ton of money in Ryan Tannehill, which some people thought was questionable, and now they've invested a ton of money at the running back position. So it is curious to see how the team itself is making decisions moving forward on how they're building their roster. I don't know what the identity of roster building is for the Titans, but they obviously looked at it and said, hey, we trust our quarterback and our running back to be enough to get us through virtually anything, and those other places pieces are more replaceable.
Yeah.
And I think sending a message of, we're willing to reward players that perform at the top end for us enough, because you're right, with the backdrop of seeing those other players leave, it's very reminiscent, albeit a slightly different situation because of the quarterback, in what happened in Carolina. You let the face of your franchise and a bunch of other spots go in ways that were a bit abrasive. The breakup with Cam Newton wasn't the best on the way out. Greg Olsen had some words when that all started about marquee players for them on the way out. And so, at some point, he is one of the best, if not the best, in his position. But with a guy like Christian McCaffrey, even though he doesn't play a premier position, you had to look around and say, all right, we got to show them that we're going to reward somebody in this.
Now, I completely agree. I think what you said earlier, Mike, says that Derrick Henry and the Titans just worked out a good deal for both. There probably will be some that said, why did Tennessee feel they needed to do that? Maybe they didn't need to do it. But, you know, a cap hit for a running back is never going to be, as far as the other positions, awful. It's down there low, down there, I believe, where the tight ends kind of are, right? He's going to be, what, he's averaging about 12 a year, I think it would be.
So his 12.5 is his average annual value on this one. So that's the portion that puts him fifth highest among running backs.
Right, and then the cap hit isn't awful for this position. We know of many other positions where the cap hit is going to be higher. This just was a good deal for both sides, one that Derrick Henry definitely should have signed.
And they got an easy out after 2 years.
Exactly.
After two years, they're either going to cut him and be done with him and be able to get out with it with minimal cap damage, or be able to rework it and continue to kind of put him in a position where, all right, he's a well-paid running back.
Right.
He's probably above what most are going to make, especially as we see more of these multi-back teams. And so that could be the existence for them now.
He got rewarded for what he has done and what they're hoping he could do in the future of what he's great at, of running the football. And Tennessee, as Mike just said, has an out after a couple of years. So this is one where both sides get something of what they want.
Yeah, and the $25.5 million guaranteed is a big deal for him, because if he plays his contract out, he's 30 at the end of that. We all know about 30 in running backs. So at least Derrick Henry can look and say, okay, my life is set at this point, and I know exactly how my future looks. Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo, sitting with Mike Golic Jr. And y'all, we're just going to have to bear with them today. Like, they're still locked out of Twitter. You know, at this point, the two of them can't get to it. I don't know.
This is liberating. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm going to go through a whole show without having to hear any of the poison of people's pushback. My takes are all universally loved as far as I'm concerned. Everything I say today is great.
You're like day one of quarantine. It's liberating today and you feel free and you're like, oh, I have so many house projects I'm going to do and I'm going to get in shape. Let's see how you're doing in about 8 hours when suddenly you're to the dark side of all of this where you no longer want to be around your family.
Didn't it sound like I have so many house projects and want to get in shape? Sound like he was talking about himself?
Yeah, that sounded like a personal
that
thing.
Really
there.
Did.
Well, I can see one that didn't work out. So how's the house?
One that seemed
house is great. The house, perfect. Yeah. This house, not so perfect.
Your house is in shape, but your house
true,
is not
true
in
story.
Shape,
I want not that anybody cares, but true story. I walked in yesterday. I got my hair cut yesterday. Thanks for noticing, you savages. But I got my hair cut yesterday, and you know, in Connecticut, everything's very, very locked down. Only a certain number of people got to wear a mask. And I walk in, and I haven't seen the girl that cuts my hair. I haven't seen her in months. And I walk in and she's from Sri Lanka. And so she has a great accent that's amazing. And so I walk in and the first thing she's like, oh, Jason, wow, you put on weight.
Oh, wow. That's what she said. So by the way, just as a very quick aside, how much you pay for that haircut?
$30.
Ooh, okay.
$30.
Elena Price Deladon.
Price.
Yeah.
$30.
Yeah. Elena Deladon.
Maybe see how much of it you can get back.
Yeah. Wow. Wow, I got nothing. I got a fresh look. That's what I got, by the way. And fresh look brought to you by Sport Clips. Could have gotten the fresh look for cheaper if I'd have gone there, and it would have been everybody's good. It's a new season at Sport Clips. Haircuts, all stylists are clean, certified, and guy smart. Let's get to some Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And it comes in the form of Elena Deladon, WNBA MVP. We're all aware of her incredible ability. The curious issue over the last few days, guys, has been she's looking for a medical opt-out, and she's battled a very public battle with Lyme disease. She's been very open about it and trying to be part of the voice for finding a cure and handling it better, and it's been something that's been a huge part of her platform. So she went in and looked for a medical exemption from the WNBA, and at least as of yesterday afternoon, that hadn't happened. So she went on SportsCenter and she was talking to Elle Duncan, and Elle asked her a really interesting question about whether or not her status as a superstar player is part of the cause that she was denied by the NBA for. This is what she said.
I'm not sure. And I really hope it didn't. I would hope they would treat me as player X and they see that I've been treated for something for 9 years. They've seen my blood work. I submitted everything. So I really hope that wasn't the reason why this happened. I hope it's doctors just still being unaware of Lyme disease and not having Lyme literate doctors on that panel, because I don't want to believe that that's what happened, but unfortunately, it might be what happened.
So again, the basics of this is that she was looking for the medical exemption, and there's a panel of doctors, which is agreed to by the league and the Players Association. So it's both sides agreeing, we're going to listen to this panel of doctors, and there's no appeal to it. So both sides agreed to it, and she got denied by this panel of doctors. They said the CDC does not have Lyme disease on the list of high risk for COVID if you've had Lyme disease. Elena obviously has her own personal doctor that disagreed with that, and Elena disagrees with that. But now we're into this, did they do this so they would force her to play situation?
Yeah, and so now we get to the point where the news yesterday was also that the Washington Mystics announced that even if she was not granted the medical exemption, she was going to be on their roster and would be paid her salary even if she didn't play this year. And so what this ends up as now is, all right, so the Mystic have decided to step up in this situation,
right,
make it whole for a player that has certainly meant a ton to them as the reigning MVP and is obviously a huge part of all their success on this. But for them, I'm sure, and for, you know, Elena Deladon at this point, it's going to be maybe the principle of this now. And for her, she had a decision to make that was looming here that she said, I'm going to talk to my wife, I'm going to try, right, and see what I do going forward. I'd have to imagine that decision is at least a lot easier to now say, all right, I'm going to be financially whole on this, and so I can make the decision that's in the best interest of my health and safety.
I'll just be curious to see if other WNBA teams are willing to do that for lesser players that are also deemed not. Oh, because you could make the argument the WNBA was trying to force her to play because of her status. You could also make the argument that the Washington Mystics did the right thing for her because of her status. So, like, I could see where it plays into both sides of it.
And I'm being kind of that mid-level player that I was always about the whole and not the stars, even though I know leagues are run on the stars, but Union is supposed to be for the whole. And when a lot of people were coming out and saying they should have made an exception for her and given her the medical exemption because she's a star in the league, my thought, which goes again to the whole, is, well, wait a minute. You know, if you're doing that for her, then if there's somebody else that comes along that has some kind of – you know, there's a lot of players in the WNBA. Maybe somebody else had a Lyme disease issue as well. You're doing the exact same thing for that person that we don't know her name, but she's in the league. And so I just want to make sure I get exceptions for the stars. I understand that thought process, but there are some things where I'm just like, okay, this is kind of a serious situation here. If you're going to actually make an exception for her, are you doing that for others as well?
Yeah, well, it sounds like this is the other side of the coin that she's coming at from, because she said in the quote, I want to just be treated like player X in this situation and not one where she believes that on the other side. I'm sure it's somewhere in the middle on all of this, but the curious thing is, because this has been well documented with her, this is for, you know, a pre-existing condition, forget just in general, but with her in the league where she said, every year I'm submitting this blood work. Mm-hmm. Everyone is well acquainted with this in that process. And so was there not some awareness for that going into this? Right. Because this isn't, you know, this isn't a normal medical issue for a player in the instance of player not. This is in the sphere of the pandemic and with the backdrop of someone's legitimate fear for their health and safety and all this. So that's why I guess extra sensitivity in a situation like this seemed to me to be the default setting, or should have been the default setting, knowing, all right, we're trying to make sure we go into this as buttoned up as possible as a league, that you avoid snags like this because it does nothing but detract from what you're trying to do overall.
So now she has to decide if she wants to play, right?
Right, yeah. And that'll be the next step for her. And I think, to your point, Mike, and a very good one about representing everybody, these are the points where I would hope the WNBA and the WNBA Players Association would not just look at Elena Deladon, but would look at Lyme disease as a general.
Right.
Okay, should we be adding Lyme disease to one of, like, that's the question that needs to be answered so that they can have standard treatment across the board.
SportsCenter update, Twitter, we still need help. Other than that, Washington Mystic star Elena Deladon will be paid whether she plays or not. She was looking for that medical exemption for the upcoming season because she has dealt with Lyme disease for years. The panel of doctors said she will not get an exemption to play, but the Washington Mystics team said, we will keep her on the roster, and even if she doesn't play, she will still get her full salary. In the NFL, the Titans agreed to a four-year, $50 million contract extension with Derrick Henry, including $25.5 million guaranteed. Henry again led the league in rushing. He was tied for most rushing touchdowns last season. His $12.5 million average annual value makes him the fifth highest paid running back in the league. And Chase Elliott, congrats to you. Who else on a Wednesday made $1 million? He did. He became the third youngest driver to win NASCAR's All-Star race last night, and doing so in front of an estimated, this is key too that we need to talk about, in front of 20,000 fans at Bristol Motor Speedway. The 24-year-old takes home $1 million for the win and joins his father, Bill Elliott, as the only two drivers to win an All-Star race away from its traditional spot in Charlotte. On this date, July 16th, 1941, Joe DiMaggio extends the longest hitting streak in Major League Baseball history to 56 games. DiMaggio went 3-for-5 with a double in Cleveland before the historic run ended the following day.
SportsCenter is brought to you by Blue Emu. Maximum pain relief works fast and you won't stink. It's pharmacist recommended odor-free pain relief for muscle pain, backache, strains, sprains, and even arthritis. There's no stinging or burning involved. It's simple pain relief. Blue Emu Maximum Pain Relief works fast and you won't stink.
Go look at Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, Sirius XM Channel 80, and your smart speakers. Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo, sitting with Mike Golic. Mike Golic Jr., presented by Progressive Insurance. You just heard there, yesterday came and went without a long-term deal for Dak Prescott. So let's head over to the show, Penzo Performance Line, and figure out what it means. Dan Graziano joins us there, ESPN NFL insider. Dan, thanks for the time. Hope you and yours are safe. Really appreciate you joining us. And now that we know that there's no long-term deal for the Dak and the Cowboys, what's realistically next?
Well, first of all, we don't have to talk about this again until after the season because they're legally not allowed to negotiate again on a long-term deal until after the season's over. So we all get to take a deep breath on the when will it happen front, because it cannot, according to NFL rules, happen until literally the day after the Dallas Cowboys 2020 season ends. So that's number one. Number two, this time next year, they're going to end up in the same situation, which is, do they want to let him hit free agency or do they want to franchise him again? If you franchise a guy twice in a row, I'm sure you guys have addressed this, that you have to pay him 120% of his previous year's salary. So his franchise number next year would be in excess of $38 million. So they end up paying him close to $70 million over 2 years on two franchise tags if they can't get a deal done this time next year. Now, there's all kinds of questions about the relationship. Does this damage the relationship? Are there hard feelings? You know, only Dak Prescott's going to be able to answer that. Only Jerry Jones is going to be able to answer that. I don't detect that at this point, with the exception of Dak's brother tweeting. I don't know how much stock we put in that, but I think the idea is it's all business. There was an expectation that there would be a deal done. Both sides come out of yesterday disappointed. But as I mentioned, they get, you know, 6 months to reset themselves and try this again at a later date.
And for those that may not know, Dak's brother Tad tweeted, "There's a reason I was never a Dallas Cowboy fan growing up or before they drafted Dak. After today, who knows how much longer I'll be cheering for them." So, Dan, talking about options, is that really an option? At $31.4 million this year, he has the highest cap hit in the league. Next year, we just talked about, even if the cap stayed the same, it would be at about a $38 million right in there, which would probably, I would imagine, be the highest again because Patrick Mahomes wouldn't have kicked in yet. So is that really a viable option, or can we literally take that one off the table and say they're not going to pay him $38 million on the franchise tag next year?
Well, I think it's a viable option, but you mentioned the possibility of a flat cap or even a cap going down next year because of the likelihood of lost revenue this year. There are already discussions between the NFLPA and the NFL about how that will affect next year's cap. If the cap goes down, if it stays the same, obviously that 38 hits a whole lot harder than it would if the cap went up another $10 million like it's been doing every year for the last 10 years. So that has to be factored in, and what that does is it just really increases Dak's leverage. I mean, if you get to next year and you're talking contract and you're Dak Prescott and you say to the Cowboys, yeah, you can give me what I want or I could just play on the tag, and you've got to figure out the rest of your roster around $38 million. You don't want to do that. So he's in a much better spot. This is, I keep telling people, last year was the tough year. Last year was the year he played for $2 million. That was the end of his rookie contract. And that was the high-risk year because if he had gotten hurt or hadn't played well, he wouldn't be in the position he's in now. This year, he's getting 31.4. So if everything goes wrong, if something terrible happens, you know, first of all, he's got an insurance policy against it. And second of all, you know, 31.4 is a pretty good chunk to have in the bank. So he's in a much stronger position now than he was a year ago. And if he gets, I mean, when they get to the end of the year and they want to talk contract again, he'll be in an even stronger position because you're right. They're not going to want to carry that number in 2021.
Dan, so with that difficulty ahead, what's the best case scenario for the Cowboys this time next year?
The best case scenario for the Cowboys is that in mid-February or mid-March or whenever the Super Bowl happens, the Cowboys have won it. They're clearing space on the shelf for their latest Super Bowl trophy, the Lombardi Trophy, and everyone's in a great mood, and Dak Prescott wants to be there forever, and they want him there forever, and they work out a deal that probably comes close to what Mahomes is making. That's the best case scenario, is that he has a monster year and they win everything and they have to pay him, but they don't care because everyone loves each other.
All right. So Dan, let's take the other side of it. What's the best case scenario? If you're looking at Dak and it doesn't work out long-term with the Cowboys, if he hits the open market, in your mind, what's the real best case contract look like for Dak Prescott on the open market next year?
So go back a couple of years to Kirk Cousins, who hits the open market, having not done what Dak has already done in terms of, you know, the numbers and the division titles and all that kind of stuff. You know, he would do extremely well. Now we don't know. We can't. It's tough to forecast who's going to be looking for quarterback this time next year. You know, different things can happen. But I mean, you know, like the New England Patriots are going to need a quarterback. Like we know these kinds of things are going to be out there. So. He'll be in a strong position. I mean, I think a young, healthy free agent quarterback who's proven himself as a starter is probably the best thing you can possibly be on the free agent market. And I think Cousins proved that when he went to Minnesota on a fully guaranteed deal that's unprecedented and no one's even done it since. And in fact, it's so good that they had to extend him again and give him even more guaranteed money this offseason. So contractually, financially, for Dak Prescott, the hitting free agency would be a real monster windfall.
Dan Graziano joining us here on Golic and Wingo. So Dak will play on the franchise tag. For anybody that does not know, he'll be only the third quarterback to actually play on the franchise tag. Drew Brees did it when he was with San Diego, and we all know Kirk Cousins did it twice in Washington. Dan, there are 12, including Dak, 12 guys who are going to play or most likely going to play on the franchise tag. That's a record. I think before it was 7 or 8, right in that area there. Is that more a function of just where is, I guess, is it mostly a function of where we are with the pandemic and not sure of revenue?
Partially. I think that has slowed down all league business throughout the offseason. I think that's a big part of it. Another part of it, though, Mike, is that these numbers are huge, right? I mean, like, if you're getting franchised right now, look at A.J. Green. A.J. Green's coming off a year in which he did not play. He's going to be 32 years old when, if this season starts. The franchise number for wide receivers is right around $18 million. So if the Bengals come to me and I'm A.J. Green and they say we want to do a long-term contract, I say, all right, you got to guarantee me at least $20 million for me to even pick up the phone because I'm already getting 18. So if you can't guarantee me $19, $20 million in this new contract, then we're not even having a conversation. So I think that happens across the board. Joe Tooney and Brandon Scherff in New England and Washington are guards. The franchise number for guards is the same as it is for tackles. These guys are making tackle money at guard. It's tough to get to a long-term deal when that's the starting point and the player is already probably happy with it. Now, not everyone's happy with it. Obviously, some of these guys, you know, Yannick Ngakoue has asked for a trade, et cetera. But, I mean, most of these guys are going to make out pretty well on these franchise tags. And in a year where teams, I mean, only 25% of the first round picks have even signed yet, and those contracts are slotted. So teams are slowing down the rate at which they're spending. It's been very difficult, I think, to come to an agreement on long term deals with players who already are looking at significant salaries this year, even if they do nothing.
Dan Graziano with us here on Golic and Wingo. So to that end, one long-term deal that I was not thinking was going to get done was Derrick Henry yesterday. Him and the Titans signed a four-year deal with $25.5 million guaranteed over the course of that. I'm curious, though, what effect, if any, is that going to have on the running back market going forward? Essentially average per year, he's about fifth in this right now. It seemed like a pretty moderate deal. Does that depress the rest of the running back market?
Well, it doesn't inflate it. He would have been the fifth highest paid running back if he played on the franchise tag. Like, he was getting 10 point something. And if he had played on the franchise tag this year and again next year, his number would have been 20, what was it? We did this yesterday. 23.6, 24, $22.6 million if he had played on two consecutive franchise tags. And the guarantee in this contract is 25.5. So it's not a major jump. It looks like he did the team a favor or that he at least hedged against the possibility of injury this year because you don't get the franchise tag next year if you get hurt. So, I don't think if you are the agent for Joe Mixon, if you're the agent for Dalvin Cook, if you're the agent for Alvin Kamara, I don't think you're doing cartwheels this morning over the Derrick Henry deal. He couldn't even get the average annual salary that David Johnson got from the Cardinals 2 years ago. And I think that's, you know, if you're going to do a long-term deal and give the team control over your next 4 years' worth of income, the sense I got calling around last night was that you would have expected or hoped to get more than he got in terms of the guarantee. Tricky with running back, like we talk about all the time, because the money's not always there for running back. And, you know, Derrick Henry, the way he runs, if he gets hurt this year, you know, maybe it's all over, so you're locking in 25.5. But, I think there was some hope that if there was a Derrick Henry deal done, it would be more significant and groundbreaking than the one that this appears to be.
We're talking to ESPN NFL insider Dan Graziano. Dan, all these contract conversations mean nothing if we don't actually see football. I know you've been doing a heck of a job covering the NFL, NFLPA negotiations. So what's the latest in that process?
The latest in that process as of last night, so I haven't, I mean, it's early this morning. I haven't checked in, but the NFLPA was putting together a response to the NFL's latest proposal, which, you know, didn't do much for them. They, the NFLPA is hoping that they can eliminate the remaining preseason games, that they can get the NFL to test them every day as opposed to every other day. And there's a couple other things they're working through in terms of what the opt-out procedures are, if you have a medical condition that says you can't play, or if you're just uncomfortable not playing. A lot of details have to be worked out around the COVID protocols, especially considering we're 12 days away from the start of training camp for most teams. So the owners are going to have a call Friday, to go over where things stand in terms of opening of training camp. And it's possible, if they're still held up in negotiations with the players, that they come out of tomorrow's call and say, look, we need a little more time before training camp starts. They don't want to do that. They've insisted they won't, but obviously it's possible, especially when you look, guys, at, you know, what's going on with the virus. If it's spiking in places like Texas and Arizona and California, you know, you look at having NFL training camps in those states when they're closing down restaurants again and those kinds of things. So a lot is very fluid. The NFLPA wants more assurances from the league on how things are going to operate with regard to the virus before they sign anything that's an agreement to play. The league could impose work rules if the NFLPA doesn't agree to them, but no one wants it to get to that point. So really, there's a lot to figure out in a very short amount of time, and that's unfortunately where things stand.
And if you just close your eyes and listen, Dan, it sounds like what we were saying about baseball a couple of weeks ago. You know, that there was all of a sudden that uh-oh moment. Now, baseball is about the salaries and such, and I know it's different here. There is obviously some money involved with the escrow and things, but the testing and procedures. Are you feeling less optimistic that this thing can start on time, or they're going to struggle to reach some sort of an agreement?
Like, I'm less optimistic than I was a month ago, but I think that has a lot to do with the trajectory that the virus has taken in the United States of America, as opposed to, NFL-specific concerns, right? I think when you talked to people in the NFL a month ago, 2 months ago, there was a thought that, hey, this thing's trending in the right direction, and by the time it's going to affect us, we should be in a place where we have easy access to testing, where there's advances in treatment, where the numbers are down. That stuff's not necessarily occurring in the world at large, and for that reason, the conversations they're having right now, the NFL and the NFLPA, are trickier than they were expected to be. So I'm more pessimistic now about a season, and certainly about it starting on time, than if you had asked me a month or so ago. It just feels to me like there's too many questions and still need answers for anything to be ironed out in 12 days' time, to the point where everybody's showing up at training camp and ready to practice in any kind of way that resembles normal. It's not going to be normal, but they want to resemble as much as possible a normal NFL training camp if they can have them. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure I feel the same way you guys do, and the vast majority of our listeners. I hope that they can practice and have training camp and play a season. I hope so, but I don't feel 100% confident in all of this now, given the way everything's going.
Dan, as always, we appreciate your time, my friend. Stay safe. Thanks so much for joining us early in the morning.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Dan Graziano, ESPN NFL Insider.
Are you guys feeling uneasy at all? I mean, to because our thought process has always been, well, football's going to be there way back when it had the longest runway. It's going to be there, no problem. Then all of a sudden, you know, we have these conversations going on that we just went on with the union and baseball and the league. Again, that was more about money, but they seem to be quite apart on a lot of things, and I'm just starting to get that little uneasy feeling a bit here.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm uneasy about everything in all this because, like Dan said, you go back to what Dr. Fauci said at the beginning of all this. The virus is going to dictate when we can return to normalcy, and the virus is dictating it in some not so uncertain terms and some pretty gnarly terms in certain areas. And so I look at this and say, what baseball had was, when we were going through all that and baseball was making decisions, Dan was right. It was starting to trend in a different direction. We had gotten through some of the real ugliness in March and April that we had seen, and we were starting to flatten the curve and do all these things. And so baseball was operating in a place where, all right, you could feel a little more certain maybe about projecting a better future. Now, for the NFL, the ground is changing under your feet in a way that I don't know was necessarily the case in those other negotiations, and so it makes it kind of hard to pin down a lot of these issues.
Golic and Wingo, presented by Progressive Insurance. Jason Fitz, in for Trey Wingo with Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr. I was listening to you guys a few weeks ago when you had the NFL Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Alan Sills, on Golic and Wingo. And the comment that he made that is stuck in my head about this was, and so easy to think of, is that the virus is not going to adjust to the NFL. The NFL will have to adjust to the virus. And when I heard him say that, it was like that was sort of an aha moment for me, that it all comes down to the one thing that has to be controlled, which are the numbers. And the players and the owners are going to argue about a lot of the schematics. But to Mike's point, until we start flattening something, yeah, I'm incredibly nervous because the numbers continue to go up. And the medical experts that are advising the NFL are looking around and saying this isn't the proper environment. There's nothing we can do about that outside of, like, you can root for sports all day long until those numbers get normalized, until we all do what has to be done to make those numbers normalized. I don't know how football manages to get played.
No, so it's going to be very difficult, but at the very least, if there is football that is getting played, we know Dak Prescott is doing it for the Cowboys. And I think the one thing Dan Graziano said that I am happiest about is that much like the end of Deflategate or any of these other controversies, we don't have to talk about it anymore. We're good on the Dak Prescott franchise tag. So as we put a bow on it, it's interesting to look at what the ramifications for this are. Bill Barnwell did a really good article and write-up on that on .com last night. But the one thing that keeps shining through to me is this made clear what we've been shouting since February when all of this was taking much longer as expected. They clearly don't love Dak like that.
They like Dak. They don't love him. You know, they're not ready to walk down the aisle with them.
Dak said, "I love you," and Dallas said, "Thanks."
Thanks. You know, Dak's waiting and waiting and waiting for the to be asked to walk down the aisle. Waiting and now, but I do agree with Dan, because at the end of the day, we know Jerry Jones, A, wants to win more than anything in the world, and B, has no problem spending money. So I do agree the best outcome is for them to win and then him pay Dak a lot of money.
Win to what extent? Because winning the Super Bowl makes everything easy, like right, Dan said, and maybe that was the misguided version of it. The one that's interesting is, all right, Dallas makes the playoffs. Maybe they win one game. Maybe they don't. They make the playoffs and do that. Like, the middle ground, and rarely do these decisions get made that easily one way or another. Dak is probably not going to bomb and throw for 2,500 yards and punt on third down in this one, and they're probably not going to win the Super Bowl. And so what version What's of the middle ground
can you see? NFC Championship game? I mean, we were saying this about, how quickly we forget the coach. Jason Garrett. Were we saying that about him, that he had to get to at least maybe the NFC Championship game last year? So now let's switch that to Dak. How far does Dak need to lead them to where Jerry Jones is happy enough to say, okay, we're going to pay you big money?
I genuinely believe one playoff win. It doesn't take a run to the championship game. I think the trickier thing for them is if they win the division and then they get knocked out in the first round. Like, worst case scenario for the Cowboys, they win the division, knocked out in the first round, Dak has a bad game. That now all of a sudden you're right back in the what the heck do we do? And, you know, if they didn't already see it, what do they see now? But I think winning a playoff game is enough to turn around and say, can you really put a no-name quarterback or a different quarterback in there?
Well, I was going to say, this is all from the Cowboys' standpoint, because all Dak needs to do, regardless of team success, is have another statistical
exactly
year
right.
like he did last
exactly
year.
Right. He
and someone is going to pay him, because the Cowboys, 100%. By doing all the deals the way they have put themselves in this position where you spend a lot of time, money, and effort making a really nice-looking roster. And are you willing to put the future of that roster? And really, Jerry Jones, we've heard, he feels the clock ticking on himself a little bit more in a lot of this stuff. You really willing to put that immediate potential championship future in the hands of whatever version of the quarterback free agent market comes loose in the next couple of years, or someone in the draft that you're not going to be bad enough to actually go after? Because that's the other part. We don't expect them to bottom out and all of a sudden be in the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes in all this one. So where do you actually fall?
It'd be a free agent in the
Cam Newton. Well, and I think this is the other argument, and people constantly tweet all of us. Sorry, I know that's a triggered word right now.
Wow, rude.
I know people hit us up all the time about what his value should be. Make no mistake, if Dak were on the open market today, there are several teams across the league that would quickly
without question.
I mean,
he wouldn't be getting a Mahomes deal or anywhere near that, but he would be getting paid.
Being on the open market, he would find himself getting very, very rich.